My name is Legacy from the Perfect 10 Club, and you're listening to 90.7 WGXC ACRA.
Did you know that Wave Farm's WGXC 90.7 FM has its own app? The Wave Farm Radio app, available for both iOS and Android, allows users to listen to live audio from any of the Wave Farm web streams, including WGXC 90.7 FM, Standing Wave Radio, the installations in the Wave Farm Art Park, and other partner streams. And you can also find us on the Bloomberg Connects app, where you can explore the Wave Farm Art Park installations and the Pomotsitok Wak Kulistok, an indigenous sound walk. Plan your visit and learn more about what Wave Farm has to offer at wavefarm.org.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by Upstate Films, a nonprofit theater presenting Sonic Wave, an ongoing music and sound-rich series screening in an Atmos theater at the Orpheum in Saugerties every Monday night. This month, playing Devo, Breadcrumbs, and Hands on a Hard Body in Heavy Metal Parking Lot. Information about screenings and special guests at upstatefilms.org.
Wave Farm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Patrick of Brooklyn, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
So different. they were stalling. And now they seem so different. They seem so different. They seem so different. Should have hatred for you. But I do not have any. And I have always loved you.
Welcome to Mrs. to the Ether. My name is Kat Tice. You're listening to WGXC on ACRA Catskill Hudson 90.7 FM, listener supported radio for open ears. That was, if you don't know, Sinead O'Connor, Feel So Different, a song that means a great deal to me and my guests that I'm super excited to have on. This afternoon, today, we have Molly McKinley, who is, an incredible artist, interdisciplinary artist based in the Hudson Valley. She works in photography, light, glass, and sculpture to materialize the ethereal and visceral aspects of nature consciousness, which probably makes sense why she'd be on this show, where I read the tarot of artists and writers and thinkers who think about spirit and art. Her work has been shown at the Turley Gallery in Hudson, Ozzie Geisberg Gallery, Roundabouts Now in Kingston, Friedman Gallery in New York City, and I think still Beacon. No, they're not in Beacon anymore, but they're still great, and they're still in New York. And the Contemporary Jewish Museum, Not a Foreland, Pioneer Works, Urban Glass, Independent Curators International, the Samuel Dorsky Museum at SUNY New Paltz, the Museum of Art and Design, Anthology Film Archives, and many, many others. And she has just recently closed a show called Gloop Entity that was, where was it at?
That was at ADS.
ADS.
In their project space in downtown Newburgh.
Cool. Great. One last thing. Molly has some upcoming residencies at Normalized Talking to the Dead in Lilydale, which I am really excited to talk about. And, welcome, Molly.
Thank you so much, Kat. I'm super excited to be here today.
So first off, I guess to kind of just get into your practice and kind of how you work with the materials that you do, maybe we could start off by just talking about Gloop Entity and kind of what that work was about and what it was.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess I like to start out by saying that I am really open to using a lot of different materials, and I don't necessarily identify as a sculptor or a photographer, but I use a lot of those kinds of practices in my work. So Gloop Entity was really both of those, and using photographs of the inside of limestone dissolution caverns and froth that gathers on the sides of streams and at the bottom of waterfalls, and printing those on inkjet canvas so that they're malleable and have a little bit of give to them, and making those into large-scale sculptural forms, some of which are hanging from the ceiling, some of them are wall-mounted, some of them have antique repurposed stained glass integrated into them, which is either illuminated and sometimes not. Sometimes it's just used as a textural material. And so I'm really trying to understand these spaces of like the deep interior caverns of the earth and these margins of wet places that are deep in the woods often, and thinking about these textures as having like an explicit intelligence to them actually, and often have a sense of, especially when you're talking about caves, like a, they've been villainized into and like a pejorative underworld, and we associate them with fear and hell, and they've really been removed from the sacred in a way that I think is detrimental to what they can offer us, because I find them to be incredibly soft, beautiful, gentle spaces, and my body reacts in a really specific way to being inside of them. And so just kind of bringing the underworld myth back around in a different way that offers something a little bit more loving and reciprocal.
Yeah, when did you, because you've done a few projects like kind of exploring cave spaces, and I'm I really find it interesting thinking about kind of this undoing of the villainy of like the underground and being like, you know, kind of championing this like belief that there is so much beauty and life within, under us, not just above us. And I mean, as above, so below, you know, but yeah, but you've been doing this stuff for a while. Like what was the first like location that you kind of started this kind of exploration, or how did it start for you?
That's a really great question. I guess early in my childhood, I actually went to some of these show caverns. That's really what these places are called, where you like pay, you know, a nominal entrance fee and, you know, go down under the ground. Usually there's like a long set of stairs. Sometimes there's an elevator. So it was always in my consciousness. And it was probably in 2021 that I revisited this idea. And I went to Howe Caverns, which is just west of Albany, which is a place that I absolutely love. It's incredible. That one you do have to take an elevator, and I always love to tell people that there's just these two buttons. One says lodge and one says cave. And so the tour guide presses the cave button and you descend for what seems like a really quite long time, and then you end up in this beautiful kind of gothic foyer with these there's these sconces that are pretty remarkable in that room. And from there, you go on this tour. So I actually booked a photographer's tour, which was maybe 2.5 hours, possibly 3 hours of just me and a local who's named Trinity. Shout out Trinity if you're out there. She was great. And she just allowed me to kind of photograph whatever I wanted to. And so she was turning on the lights as we went, but was conserving energy. So the area that was directly behind us, she would turn off the lights right behind us, and she would also turn off the lights in front of us. So there's this sense that, like, you're surrounded by darkness. But it felt incredible. Like, it wasn't scary. Like, if you've ever seen The Descent, which is a really a classic feminist horror film about this group of, like, spelunking women that go down into this cave together, and then some really wild things happen to them. I feel like that kind of adds to the demonization of, like, being in the dark in a cave. It is a primal thing, right? Like, yeah, it might be a little bit uncomfortable for those of us who have evolved out of cave dwelling into kind of into this sun worship kind of phase of humanity and space worship. But yeah, I loved being surrounded by the darkness in that experience. I thought it was so soft, and it really just felt like you were quite literally in the womb of the earth, and there's a real gentle energy. When you're down at that level, it's like mid-50s temperature kind of consistently, so it feels pretty comfortable if you've got like a long sleeve shirt on. So just it felt really comfortable to me physically, and the way that sound functions in the space is really interesting too. And I really felt like I still wanted to continue working with that after that experience, and that was on the solstice actually in 2021. So there's something really magical about that, where I arrived in this completely empty parking lot at Howe Caverns, and I was the only person that was there from the public, and it was snowing. And then I went into this beautiful experience, and she took me on this, there is like a small river underground there, so there's boats, and so she's like, do you want to go on the boat tour? Which was like my Phantom of the Opera fantasy come to life. It was incredible. So I feel like that was, like, as an adult, like, revisiting those foundational experiences as a child in Virginia, like Luray Caverns and places like that.
Cool. Something I think is an ongoing, I don't want to say like there's, I mean, theme is sort of a lame word, but I mean, there's a consistency. Consistency is a better word. A consistent kind of interest in kind of balancing the material elements with kind of spiritual phenomena in your work, and you have kind of a astute kind of attunement for making that connection, and I'm really curious, like, where does that come from, and you know, and how do you hone that, like in just because you like you don't work with the same types of materials all the time. You don't do the same sort of disciplines. You resist that for something higher. And I think it is that attunement, like kind of finding that spark wherever it comes and aligning nature and spirit. And I'm just, I don't know. It's like, it seems too much hard to say kind of like, you know, where does it come from in general? Like, it feels like it'd be easier to say, like, make it project specific, but I know you well enough to know that doesn't work that way. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I can
answer that. Yeah.
Okay.
well, I think actually it came from working with difficult materials, and I started working with salt and carving salt and eroding salt with water and hammer and chisel in like 2012. And salt is a mineral, you know, it is an elemental material, and it just has its own way of functioning. And I learned when I was starting that process that I could try to exert what I wanted out of it, but I actually had to respond to the material itself. And that lesson really continued in my work with glass. So when I started doing kiln casting of glass and then moving on to glass blowing, glass is also a super difficult material and also a mineral-based material, a silica-based. So there's something about meeting the material where it is that gave me this sense of like, okay, there's actually agency within the material itself. And to me, that really intersected with my ideas that, well, they're not my ideas at all, actually, but they're ideas that come from indigenous tradition and post-humanism, and just kind of anyone who maybe has some humility and realizes that we might not be the ultimate agent of consciousness on this planet. and really looking at all elemental materials as having an intelligence. So I was like, you know, I really think that these are collaborations. I think that the work is more effective. The projects turn out in a way that makes more sense and feels more resonant. And, you know, there's clearly something visually, formally cohesive when I get out of my own way a little bit of feeling like I have to exert my force onto this, but rather I'm meeting this material, maybe not halfway, it's maybe not quite 50-50, but I'm allowing the intelligence of nature to work through this project. And I'm allowing myself to kind of put my human need to control things, maybe just to the side sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I like how you describe it, like a collaboration. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really important. And for anyone that works with material in that way, I think that's probably really resonant. I think that people that work with ceramics experience that a lot, you know, because they're working with earth and fire, and there's, you know, kilns do the things that they do to those earthen materials, and same with glass. So you just have to, like, there are obviously people who are working at a level with those kinds of materials where they are really masterfully figured out how to exert control over it. And I've learned a lot from those craftspeople. And I think for me, the conversation with me and the material is most resonant where I'm stepping back a little bit and allowing it to do things that it's maybe not supposed to do traditionally, or where it's kind of finding an in-between.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that leads really well into my next point of interest, is thinking about kind of talking to spirits themselves and, you know, dare I say, just talking to the dead, if you want to be really blunt about it, which is something that you have been interested in and been in practice with for a while in your art and life. And and you're going to Lilydale really soon for a residency there. For listeners that may not be familiar with what and where Lilydale is, can you share?
Yeah. Lilydale is a community in Western New York of mediums. And mediumship is defined as like a practice of communicating with the dead, which is a little bit different than like psychic practice from what I understand. I'm by no means an expert on mediumship. I don't claim to be a medium, but I'm really interested in, I don't know, maybe just challenging what we think we know about the limitations of human consciousness and piercing the veil beyond the living and the dead. And Lilydale is a place where you can go and like book a reading with a medium, and they will speak to the dead. I think from what I understand, I've never been, so I'm excited to go for the first time, but from what I understand, you have to be a little flexible about who you think you're going to communicate with. You know, you might get a message from someone that isn't who you wanted to talk to. And it primarily functions in the summer as a place that the public can go to. And it is a place that I've wanted to go for a long time. It really has been functioning for a long time, maybe since like the Victorian era, yeah, as a place for this kind of activity. So I'm going to be an artist in residence there, which I'm not sure what that's going to mean for me right now, but I do want to work on just communicating with the unseen. And I think on a more general level, mediumship can have a definition of like, yeah, communicating with unseen intelligences. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the human dead. You know, it could be these more elemental spirits that I work with in material and through sight photography.
Right. And so how, so you're planning to go and kind of just like have a session with a medium and kind of see who shows up, or are you going?
I don't know.
You don't know yet.
And I really don't know. I feel like I'm not maybe even as interested in getting a reading as I am in like absorbing the place and as a whole. I think I just want to feel what it feels like to be there.
Totally.
I have friends that have gone that say that they get migraines there. It can be kind of intense.
Yeah.
So I'm sure I will end up probably getting a reading from someone, but I don't know. I just want to be in the soup of that place and see what comes of it, how it kind of can affect my work, how it can affect the way I view the world, you know. And I think until kind of maybe the past couple of years, I wasn't really, I don't know if I would describe myself as someone who really had like a firm belief that there was an afterlife. Mm-hmm. And I'm still always questioning that. And I think that that questioning is inherent in all of my practice, is like, I never want to say that I really know the end all be all to anything, mm-hmm. because I think that curiosity is pretty foundational to like how I can flow through all of my practices. And the second I get a little bit too arrogant or think I know something functions a certain way in the world, I'm always proven wrong. So, you know, Lilydale is like an embodied act of continued questioning. Yeah. And, you know, my dad died when I was 19 and he had a terminal illness. He was sick through most of my childhood. So death was always around me. He was also like quite a bit older. So I grew up in a family where I was like the baby, and like my grandparents were born in the 1800s, which is absolutely bananas to hear. For some people, they're like, what are you talking about? So I feel like the dead is relevant for me because I have a lot of dead family members, and I've always been like, where did they go? What's going on here?
Yeah. So, yeah, in some ways, it's like kind of a way to be in touch in a way, maybe. I remember the first time we hung out in Newbury, we walked around a cemetery that you had felt connected to and had done some work with. And it was, can you speak to like, kind of like why that particular cemetery, or like how, cause like what I think is so interesting about it, and like from like kind of like a poetic perspective, what you've done so far, what I've seen of your work has in that regard has been, so much challenge on kind of the concept of language and kind of meaning within language, you know, and in kind of and in instigating a collaboration with spirits that kind of challenge, dismantles like kind of the superiority of like human dialogue and opens up kind of language to mean many more things than just words. You know. And was it in Newburgh that started, or
no? I've been hanging out in graveyards my whole life. Part of my childhood was spent growing up in Sandwich, Massachusetts, which is a coastal town on Cape Cod, and I have a few generations going back of family members that were like buried in this cemetery that was on the same road as our house. And so I just would like go to the cemetery to hang out. And I was an only child, so I was like, yeah, I'm just going to go wander over to the cemetery. It was super beautiful. You know, these kind of old Puritan cemeteries with like stone covered in lichen and lots of flowers, like lots of like tiger lilies everywhere. Like it really was kind of a model of a garden cemetery. I'm really interested in the history of garden cemeteries. Mm-hmm. And that was really an invention of the Victorians to try to get all of the dead and diseased bodies that were dying of tuberculosis, like outside of city centers. Mm-hmm. But they also were really comfortable with death, and so they thought, why can't we just make these beautiful places that are quite park-like, and you can come and have a picnic on a Sunday with your friends and family, and that way the dead are really integrated into your life. It's not necessarily, you know, you put your loved one into the ground and then you never go back, right? Or it's some like a grim casual occasion sometimes. So it really became like a more life-affirming celebratory place where you could really feel that circle of life. So I don't know, I just, from an early age, I was always like hanging out in cemeteries. So when I moved to Newburgh, I was like, what is this forgotten kind of ornery feeling historic cemetery downtown? It's like kind of at the intersection of Grand and South Street. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a lot of very old headstones dating back to the 1700s, and including like the tomb or mausoleum of the guy who brought goldfish to America.
Cool.
I don't know what his name is, but I do know
that. Wait, goldfish?
The fish.
Like the actual fish.
The fish was okay. Like, what about goldfish?
As a pet.
As a concept, as a pet.
As
yeah.
a concept. Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. My mind immediately went to the cracker, and I was like, kind of like.
Older than that.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
Respect. Yeah. He has all these, like, it was back in the Victorian moment where they were really obsessed with Egypt. So this, like, Egyptology motif. Huh. So there's a little, like, mausoleum that he has with a lot of Egyptian hieroglyphics on it. But he was like I think he was just like a white guy.
Probably was.
Yeah.
On that note, I'm curious. So how do you, you know, I don't want to use the overused word of ritual, but like, how do you get ready for, I mean, with all your practices and projects, it seems like you're kind of entering a different world. And I would be curious to hear you talk about kind of like the mentality that you kind of prepare yourself to get into for this work or these spaces.
I don't have one.
Yeah.
I don't have a ritual. It's something that I feel people scold me sometimes about this. They're like, have you done your energetic protection, Molly? You know, and I'm like, no, I'm fine. Don't worry about it.
I'm clear.
You know, I trust myself to take care of myself in the moment when things arise. I feel resistant to ritual. I think I was interested in ritual in my work earlier on in my career because I found it frustrating. I felt like it took up so much energy and mental space to try to do a ritual. It was an extension of theater, actually, and the production of a ritual felt I couldn't move on to do something else after that because that would be the work itself. So for a while it was just the work itself. Mm-hmm. My rituals before, you know, going on a photographic journey to a specific site are incredibly practical. They include like having water and snacks and having like my location services on and telling someone when I'm going to be back at what time in case I fall down, you know, a ravine or something.
It's important.
So, you know, the rituals are actually really like super grounded in practical considerations of being like a woman bodied person alone in nature outside. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when it comes to working with the dead, it's a little weirder, you know, like, and when I say working with the dead, I mean, I don't know, it's maybe not as even directional or specific as that might sound. I kind of am experimental and exploratory when I go to these places. So I'm like, how does this feel? I do try to ask permission. That's the one thing I do. And that's easy and straightforward. It takes like 1 second to just kind of check in with the place that you're at, whether that's like a cemetery or, you know, deep in the woods or in the center of a cave or a cavern, and just say, like, am I okay here? Am I welcome here? Is it okay if I take photographs here? Is it okay if I work with your intelligences? Do you kind of consent to this, or should I not do this?
Yeah. I think, oh, will you shuffle the cards? Thank you.
Absolutely.
I think that kind of respect and, you know, what I think is interesting about your work is, you know, I sense a very respectful stance to it all, you know, but it doesn't teeter into reverence, which I think is like kind of an important distinction, you know, like it's like, this is what happened, you know, this is what the salt did. This is where the light went. And it's like, you're kind of documenting that and sharing that and leaving it as it is, you know, so it's like, this is our collaborative statement on the dynamic of us interacting together. It's very matter of fact, or that's like kind of what I get from when I look at your work and experience your work. So it makes sense that your conversations is simply like, yeah, no, good, huh? Great, okay, let's go. You know, like, I really like that, you know?
Well, I'm easily and distracted. So, like, if I, like, get too far in one direction, like, I'm never going to do the task I intended to do. So I have to kind of keep myself on track, and I have to keep it simple. And if it gets too elaborate in one way or another, I'm really going to lose track of what I was trying to do in the first place. So it kind of helps me in that way. It's very practical and very straightforward.
Yeah. Great. Okay, so we're going to go into the tarot portion of our conversation. And I would love to hear what you want to ask.
So I think I'm really curious if there are any of these elemental intelligences that I've been working with recently, whether that's related to a specific place or actually the element itself, like frothy water or minerality or even the dead themselves, that want to, I don't know, share some feedback with me. I'm open. Whatever comes through, I'm open-minded.
Great. Let's see what we got going on here. So, dear listener, I'm doing my usual kind of Celtic cross with the Modern Witch deck by Lisa Siegel. Oh, great. And some interesting cards are showing up. Okay. So in the center, kind of the protagonist center of the spread, we have the Six of Pentacles crossed with the King of Wands. I'm sensing... a feeling. So the Six of Pentacles kind of represents having a great deal of abundance. And, you know, and pentacles represent money in general. And, you know, but abundance can look like many things. I think in this regard, I think you're kind of coming into this dynamic with, with a great deal of confidence and kind of, you know, a trajectory behind you, which I think is arming you with almost a feeling like you know that you have something to bring to this dynamic, you know, as opposed to kind of like, you know, some people go seeking to spirit when they have down to nothing, you know, like, You're not. And you're not, because King of Wands is a great, he's very kind of solid. He knows that he's the king because he's worked for it. And so it's a humble confidence.
I love that.
Yeah, it's a humble confidence. It's just is good and it's great. And I think based off everything you just said, it makes sense. And so your above and below is, so I interpret these as like sort of like these are like the external influences and then kind of internal influences. To the left, we have like our past card kind of showing up, and then we have our future present showing up, and then we have like kind of our four, the line, which I kind of always read sort of together as like these are the kind of the components that kind of speak to the futurity of the moment or the situation. So externally, you're represented by the page or this situation, not you in particular, but we have the Page of Cups, which is a lovely, lovely, lovely card. It speaks to kind of a new dynamic. An innocent dynamic, there is a young dynamic, very sweet, flirty, fun, and innocent. And I think, you know, kind of in some ways, the message I'm getting is that you kind of want to just like flirt and kind of play with the spirits.
So I do sometimes describe myself as like a paparazzi of nature phenomena.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, you're so cute. Hi.
Yeah. 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 Well, I think this page is that's that energy kind of showing up. Like you're just like, I just want to meet some new ones. I want to go to a new scene.
Yeah.
I want to see what's going on in Lilydale. You 100%. Guys, you guys seem like really solid in your scene, established. Like, I feel like I'm ready. I'm ready to kind of speak to you on your level. And let's have a good time. Let's kiki.
Let's hang out.
Yeah. You know, it's like, let's have a kiki in Lilydale.
Absolutely. Kiki in Lilydale is 100% the vibe that I want to go for.
Okay. Yeah.
We're going to set that intention right now.
We are doing it. And then the internal that you got, the internal influences, which I love as a Capricorn, this is our card. So I love the devil card, which is what you got. Because the devil, you know, the devil can represent what's like bad elements. I say that in italics, but like it's really more about vices and also kind of embracing kind of that side. And I think, kind of in the same modality or the same kind of line of thinking as like kicking with the spirits, that just makes me laugh just thinking about it like that. And cause I can see you doing it. Is you know, kind of really just really embracing that kind of, you know, once again, I say this in italics, the badness of it all. Like, kind of what's the kink of it? Like, what's the, you know, indulgence? Like, what is the, you know, hanging out, you know, kind of hang out smothered in chocolate kind of vibes, you know, like, just really just kind of celebrating. Like there's like a dark sensuality to this desire to kind of collaborate with them. And in some ways, I think they want that too.
Yeah. I also always interpret the devil a little bit as control, right? And so it's giving me another message of, like, I maybe have to lose some of my methods of control in order to meet that moment in the right way.
Sure, yeah. No, I mean, and I think, you know, it's interesting you bring up control, like, with the devil, because I think that, you know, the devil card can mean, like, you know, it can mean the vices are, you know, dangerously taking over, like when we think about kind of people that have like substance abuse problems and, you know, stuff like that, or, you know, various kinds of addiction can take a very dark control over somebody's psyche and life. And, you know, but then also is like the kind of the control of, like, you know, what is appropriate, what is respectful, what is yeah, I think, you know, kind of in thinking about how you're thinking about control, it's like kind of thinking about appropriateness. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's some like aesthetic dynamics that, you know, might get broken, or like you're open to kind of dismantling as a way to just change it up and just find like, or discover something within that liberatory like release.
Oh, yeah. That's really resonating with me. And also, I'm really thinking about the taboo of working with the dead, right?
Like, sure.
Sometimes this comes up, and you're incredibly supportive and open-minded when it comes to talking about these things. But I've also encountered people when I'm working on projects that are like, this isn't your business. This is not, you shouldn't be, you know, trying to interact with the beyond. Like, and I think I'm really interested in dismantling some of those fears, and like, I don't have like a cultural ingrained fear that I should be afraid of the dead.
Right.
So I feel like that's relevant too, but like that kind of like, what's the indulgence? Like what is, there's like the dark pleasure of it is really connecting to
right.
me for some reason, where I'm like, yes, there's something like almost feels like, I'm losing the language for it, but there is an emotion in me that maybe I can't pinpoint quite yet about going to this place even and doing this. It feels so out of my comfort zone.
Sure.
And what I know. And I'm just like, wow, yeah, let's see what's there.
Well, I think also, I mean, you know, just speaking to that point too, it's just like, you know, going Lilydale is like infamous. You know,
yeah.
I want to go so badly, but I'm so scared, because it's just like kind of having, if you have any sense of like kind of clairvoyance, for lack of a better word, in any degree of it, like being in a space where that's like a given, you know, to be within the community, and everyone's so open and just like, you know, kind of like, you know, I think there's something to be said for folks that go there and they're like, oh, like all I get are migraines, you know, like the energetics of it all.
Yeah.
And then, but also kind of countering, you know, what you just mentioned about, you know, with feedback that's like more like, this isn't your wheelhouse, like this isn't, you shouldn't be doing this, you know, to be in a like literally a community of people who are like, no, no, this is what we do.
Yeah.
You know, is like kind of, you know, I mean, it goes in and out of fashion. It, you know, it feels like more often than not, and there's certain areas where, you know, you can find pockets of community all over, people that are like down for this sort of thing, but like, it's not like a given.
Yeah.
You know, and right. To be in a town where it's just like, nope, this is our way of being.
And it's not, yeah, it's not seen as weird to be talking about the dead or talking about, you know, these things that a certain part of culture really is like, this is not scientifically backed. Like, I get that, you know, I'm a big science person, but like, I also think that there's so much beyond what we know.
Yeah.
And I don't want to like shut down any of that curiosity just because the scientific method hasn't proved it yet.
Sure.
And yeah, I'm down to like explore all of the places of like where belief begins and ends, where superstition begins and ends. Like, every place I go to is haunted anyway, so like, what's the big difference? Like, at least in Lilydale, we can talk about it out loud.
Right, exactly. And like, without that kind of counter argument to kind of just, you know, which is fine and great, and I'm with you, and I love that. And also at the same time, just kind of like, oh, to be potentially in a place where that's not the go-to or like a given that like someone will present that. I mean, maybe, I'm sure there is. Like, I'm excited. This is why I'm so excited to hear about how your experience goes after you get back. But I think that like the potential internal excitement, there is a great enthusiasm for that liberation. So, you know, and your arms, like, I think your pastness is showing off the Ace of Cups, which, you know, for those who are not familiar, it's just basically a hand holding a big, gorgeous cup with overflowing water and a heart bubble coming out of it. It's just lovely. And I think, you know, I think it's showing up here just to kind of just name the fact that you come into this work with so much like passion and love, and it has been a reciprocal dynamic that's always given back to you, like, you know, personally and also like as an artist, and you have been devoted to this practice. And I think that devotion has like, is why you're here now. You know, and I think it's just showing up to just kind of be like, kind of like, once again, kind of like, kind of, you know, supporting this King of Wands energy of just saying like, you've done this work, like, you know, in a really kind of committed, measured, loving way. And that's why you get to have this fun with the devil now.
Yes.
Yeah. You've been good. Now you can play.
Ooh, can't wait.
Our future present, we got the Four of Cups, and basically it is a young woman who is sitting on the ground with her arms crossed, wearing a sweatshirt says over it, and she is looking at three cups that, which are upright, but like literally glaring at them. And there's one other cup that's kind of being held up, waving, kind of floating in the air above her, and she's totally ignoring it. Four of Cups energy is it's interesting showing up here, and I have to kind of unpack this a little bit. But it represents an energy of kind of focusing on the thing, like thinking things have to be a certain way. And it's interesting you brought up control with the devil, because I think this is where it's showing up more of like focusing on the way you want things to be and ignoring, you know, the one cup that is really quite lovely. And for some reason, you just cannot see it. You cannot hear it. It may not be you, but so I'll take out you and that for a second. But this is an energy that seems to be either present or is going to be present. It might be on the way to the residency itself, but it's in the air. And so kind of your ongoing line kind of connected to that. And this is where it's like, oh, now we have some trickiness. So we've got a reverse King of Swords, and we got Death, we got Queen of Pentacles, and then we got a reverse Ten of Swords, like the infamous, like, 10,000 knives on your back while you're scrolling, while you're doom scrolling energy, and the card just says everything is fine. This is one of Lisa Siegel's extra cards. So I pulled another card just to kind of cross the energy, see if there's more. It was like 10 of Wands. So working back, there's something frustrating, I think, or, you know, I'm sensing, the message I'm getting is manage your expectations. Mm.
Always good advice.
Yeah. And I think kind of connected to her question, I know we got really silly with thinking about kind of like the liberatory freedom of the devil energy and kind of indulging, but I think, you know, there are always, you know, unfortunately in this realm or this kind of these types of community, there are folks that are not the real deal. And I think that you can sense that pretty well. I think this Queen of Pentacles, like, she rules with love and care. And I think that, it's just kind of, you know, understanding care as a source of power and not as an energy that means inherently that you have to be run over or taken advantage of.
Mm.
Is going to be important.
Mm-hmm.
As a tool in this process. And I think kind of, you know, learning from seeing kind of certain expectations or ideas go away and accepting that as part of the process to kind of really learn from what's left is showing up. Also, I mean, Death showing up, you're going to talk to the dead. It feels a little too obvious to me.
It's quite on the nose.
Yeah, but I feel like there's something else here. I think also kind of some, you know, if you can kind of discern or just kind of, you know, trust, you know, your instincts about what feels maybe inauthentic, for lack of a better word, and kind of go towards what is, you will have some pretty emotionally dynamic interactions.
Mm.
But it is going to be a balancing act that's going to be a big part of the experience. And it will be kind of frustrating. Potentially, I think Ten of Wands showing up here is like, you know, kind of finding a balance of like kind of accepting like sometimes the work is, you know, the work is in the research and it's just observing and it doesn't, you might not come out of it with a product.
That seems highly likely to me. In fact, that's really something I've been thinking about a lot, is just kind of going and being present with the cultural history of the place and, kind of not trying to create so much of a concrete thing that comes out of it, but just absorbing, witnessing, not expecting it to tie up all the final loose ends of my existential crises about what it means to be a mortal being on planet Earth.
Yeah. I mean, I think also this could kind of connect to just kind of experiencing other elements of the world around this space.
Yeah.
And kind of experiencing kind of the energetic schism of that.
Mm.
And maybe kind of feeling pulled in two different directions.
Yeah. I mean, Western New York is a place that I am familiar with. A lot of my early photographic sculptures, all the photographs I took of like these gloopy, wet phenomena, they're all taken in Western New York initially. And that entire body of work stems from that relationship to a landscape that is really different than, say, the Hudson Valley. Like, there's a lot of waterfalls, cascades, streams, but it's super, super rural and a completely different social culture than what Lilydale seems to be.
Yeah. I guess so, but the ongoing last message I'm getting is really just kind of just really be open, you know, excited, joyful, have a good time. But yeah, just protect your heart.
I love that.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Molly. This
Thank
is wonderful.
Thank you so much, Kat. This has been so delightful.
This is great. And so that's all for this week. We're going to close out with a song by Coco Rosie called Fairy Paradise. We're not going to get to hear all of it, but enough. And I'll see you next month.
Draws near the periphery in disbelief on delivery. Came child from the deep inferno, crusty hide of dead volcano, heartless crow with brittle beak, wind like too shock to speak, lilac dust of a woman's hair, a wooden cross, a paper prayer, a stone where her body lay, a stack of feathers, a pile of hay, a mushroom for an eyeball, a mustache from the snowfall, worms weave a ring where fairies square dance, queens and kings, fairies weave wigs with eyelash, trance music makes the fairies dance. With all maps for motion, upward angels' last devotion, one by one escort us home, to leave the elementals free to roam, to bathe in the last of ocean's foam.